Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And in the greatest mystery since the mystery of the missing cookies, Screen Verdict is going to tackle Making a Murderer.
Dun, dun, dun!
I should have had that line up.
Yeah. So we've got some exciting news, too. From housekeeping last week, I said I would send a message to all my friends to see who wants to see The Good Dinosaur with me, and I forgot to do that. So I just did that. So another great mystery is who will actually want to see The Good Dinosaur with me tomorrow? Well, no, on Saturday. Oh, wait, that is tomorrow. So I sent that out to 50 friends. So we'll see. If you hear a ding during the podcast, it means one of them's come in.
There you go. With the organizational skills of a county sheriff, Matt has organized that for us.
And I've got some cookies too, Jonathan, to enjoy while we podcast.
The reward for solving the previous case. Can we solve the case of Stephen Avery in Netflix's Making a Murderer? So we're going to tell you what it's about. We're going to set it up. I guess the premise is, there was a case in 1985, and I guess this is a good time to let you know that there will be spoilers, because there's just so much happens, we have to talk about it. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Woo, woo. Yep, Matt's looking at his phone. Okay, yep. Premise. Man, I was worried that might be a real siren. Anyone could get arrested.
I might put the phone away, then it won't be a distraction.
1985. We're in Manitowoc County. I believe that was in Wisconsin. A man named Stephen Avery gets convicted of rape. Ends up spending 18 years in jail for this. 18 years later, new DNA evidence is used to release him from jail, saying that he did not do it.
It's probably worth saying this is a documentary series. This is true. This isn't some scripted show. This is actual... Yeah. Real life, this happened.
We don't normally review a lot of documentaries, but everybody's talking about this. I just happened to find it scrolling through Netflix, got hooked, so we're going to break it down for you on the podcast. So this is a true story. First episode about him getting released 18 years later. He goes to sue. He's going to sue the county for millions of dollars for wrongful imprisonment. 2 years later, a woman goes missing, okay? And the sheriff's number one suspect is Stephen Avery. Did he do it? Why did he do it? Is he getting framed? Is he getting set up? Is he going to go down for something he didn't do yet again? We will find this out by the end of the podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. First thing about the first conviction, the first wrongful conviction, was that it was really quite obvious that he didn't do it, because it was some DNA thing. It exonerated him. But still, when you had the depositions about the lawsuit, the police and stuff were very... they still seemed to think that he might have done it. Other reviews like, yeah, maybe they made a mistake with the DNA. They were still very dismissive of like the sort of forensic sort of side of things. They seem to still not like Stephen Avery.
I loved in the questioning of the sketch artist who said something along the lines that, you know, he thought he'd done it. And so the lawyer says, so are you refuting DNA evidence that the government used to determine to set him free? And he's like, look, I don't know. I'm just saying. There's a cloud of doubt.
Yeah, like, I had it, my drawing looked pretty good. Like, I don't think it even was a sketch artist, it was just some guy, like, it was just the sheriff had done his own drawing, that he, like, was very proud of, you know, like a kid who's done a drawing and they want to put on the fridge, they're just keen to talk up their drawing.
Not enough people see it on the fridge, let's draw someone who might be involved in a high-profile case. Then lots of people will say nice things about my drawing.
Yeah.
Including, that's him. That was spot on.
Yeah. But anyway, so they still seem a bit skeptical. And the stakes seemed quite high for this department with the deposition, though. It seemed like they could be up for millions and millions of dollars for wrongfully convicting this guy, because there was a few things they didn't look into and stuff, and the guy who acted, they actually knew who did do it, and he should have been looked into, and all these sorts of things. Looked like the fix was in a bit for Stephen Avery. So it looked like the Sheriff's Department was set to lose millions and millions of dollars if they didn't get a favourable verdict. And the insurance policy didn't cover it because it would have been due to their negligence or incompetence or something.
Yeah, this is... You can't really be on the hook much more in their position. That's pretty much the worst thing you can do in terms of the higher-ups holding you accountable. That's the worst thing that you could be held accountable for, both morally and financially, for the county.
Yeah. Reputation's ruined and financially ruined. Stakes are high for the Sheriff's Department.
So I guess this is a story about Stephen Avery. Let's talk about him. I guess their family owned this auto business. They were kind of seen as outsiders, troublemakers. Stephen Avery got a few minor charges, did some things wrong. It was kind of viewed as a bit of a bad egg, but you know, he pled guilty to all of those, did his time, and when it came to this case, it was kind of, they had a potential suspect in him based purely on a description from the woman, which isn't even remotely like him, just the officer who didn't like Stephen Avery said, that sounds like Stephen Avery, and from there, they went down the rabbit hole. And basically, they were trying to pin this crime on someone that was an outsider, on, you know, a nice, wealthy, beautiful, rich lady. It was an easy case that they needed to solve quickly for the sake of the community. And as we found out, there was all this evidence against other people, not a single shred of physical evidence against him. And as a result, you get this wrong conviction, and they're on the hook for millions of dollars in this lawful termination imprisonment suit.
This, I was watching this with my mum, and we got all this, like, two episodes of this sort of stuff, and then I informed her that it's a 10-episode series, and mum was like, what, that's not the end? She's like, it's like, it covered so much.
Yeah. It's hard not to get angry during that first episode alone, seeing the lack of evidence against Stephen Avery and the amount of appeals he goes through, you know, the sort of partial DNA evidence that might have suggested to someone else, but they needed definitive evidence, which took 18 years for them to find. And
so annoying is when it turns out someone phoned the sheriff's department to think, oh, we think you got the wrong guy. Here's the guy who we think did it. And it turned out to be the guy actually did it, because he's admitted to doing it to us, and they just ignored the call.
And the guy who took that call ends up being involved in the later case.
Yeah, this is like, oh yeah, it's infuriating. And yeah, it's just so annoying. Anyway,
so where we come to?
Let's get to case two.
Yeah, it's 2005, 2 years after Stephen Avery has been released, and another beautiful, well-to-do woman goes missing, Teresa Hallback. And it turns out that she had gone to Stephen Avery's residence to take photos of a car for a magazine. So he's deemed to be the last person that's seen her, okay? So all of a sudden we're thinking, oh, it's Stephen Avery, target again.
This doesn't look good.
Let's go through the evidence against him, because Stephen Avery ends up getting arrested for this. What did the cops have on him to think that he might have something to do with the disappearance of Teresa Hallback?
Well, just before we go into that, I was very encouraged that they decided, the Sheriff's Department, that there is a conflict of interest, there is this big lawsuit against us at the moment. Let's step back. We're not going to be involved in this investigation at all. We're going to ask an outside county or department or something to come in, and they will be solely responsible for the investigation against Stephen Avery.
Mm-hmm.
I was very encouraged to hear that, and it was quite alarming to me as the evidence rolled in. So
yeah, those characters involved in the deposition such as Lieutenant Link and I think it's Sergeant Colburn. We won't see them again. They're going to take a step back. They're not going to be involved in this case.
Yes, because it would be a clear conflict of interest. So, okay. So, here's the evidence they found. Okay, so someone found her car on Stephen Avery's property.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, he runs a car wrecking place. So, there's a whole bunch of cars there, and it was, I don't know, it seemed off on the side of it somewhere. It didn't seem like right in his driveway. It seemed like it had been sort of moved to where some of the older cars were, perhaps.
Yeah, so there's hundreds of cars there, and so a search party goes out to see if we can find any evidence, and they find her car. And in the car is blood, which is later tested and found to be Stephen Avery's blood.
Okay, so Stephen Avery's blood is in the car. That's not a good thing. They find her... Is it her car key or a house key? A key of hers?
Yes. A key. The key to her car, Toyota RAV4, is found in Stephen Avery's residence.
And it's got blood on it.
Sweat or DNA with Stephen's DNA on it.
Okay. Not good. We also have some bones are found on his site.
Yeah, burned remains are found basically in his backyard.
Yeah. And is that pretty much it? Like, and then there is it his nephew or his cousin or someone comes forward with some information? And I think that's pretty much, we'll talk about that in a second, but I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
And the bullet. There's a bullet found.
Oh, it's a bullet. I forgot the bullet. Sorry, explain
in,
that.
In Stephen Avery's garage, there is a bullet found that has been fired and has Teresa's blood on it. So they think that is, and we'll go into the story of what they think happened, but they think that was how the final murder was committed with the gun, and they've now found the bullet in his garage.
Okay. So there we go. So that's, I guess, the information that they have. I guess also, she was the last person who saw him.
Yeah.
She was the photographer. She'd gone out to take some photos for him. He'd called and gotten her to come around for the photos, and that had happened too.
Yeah, it seemed she was not accounted for anywhere after that. So something definitely happened to her there or in that near vicinity. It's really just a question of who did it.
Yeah. And I can understand why you might want to ask Stephen Avery some questions.
Yeah, definitely. You always want to ask the last person that's seen her. And, you know, he denies everything. They interview him multiple times. He says over and over again, she just came over to take pictures, had nothing to do with this. And I guess the thing that really sets them down the track of, and this blows up in the news, this is kind of like the smoking gun for the prosecution, which is led by the district attorney Katz. Katz is getting on the TV, and he's been the one saying, you know, Manitowoc County's going to stay out of this. This is going to be fair and impartial. And he sets up a news conference and says, you know, beware. This is going to be brutal and gruesome and graphic. Here is the story.
Get the kids out of the room. Get the kids out of the room.
Cover their eyes.
This is Game of Thrones level stuff, guys.
Brendan Dassey, who is Stephen Avery's nephew, who lives next door, says, "We did it." He says, "We, I heard screams. I went to get mail. I heard screams. I went to Stephen Avery's place. He opened the place up just in a towel or something, said, come in. I see a strap to the bed. And then he tells me to rape her and to cut her. And then, we take her outside and shoot her and we killed her. We did it." Okay, so this is not good. This does not look good for Stephen Avery.
This looks bad. This is not what you want to hear.
So I guess from at this point, we're introduced to a few characters. because they end up sort of becoming like that in the story, the defense of Stephen Avery. If the, if these pieces do not add up to Stephen Avery committing this murder, then what in fact did happen?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, I agree. So, I think the interesting thing is with that Brendan... Is it Brendan?
Yes.
Yeah. Brendan's testimony is... We see some videos of the interrogations. And it seems like there are a lot of inconsistencies in his stories. He waffles. Like, he doesn't really give large chunks of information. And for something like... I remember... This is a good example of it. The gun. They needed him to mention... That the gun that she was shot, because that was their theory. They needed him to confirm that. But obviously he wasn't saying anything about a gun, so they need to go, oh, wait, was it with a gun? And he's like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Like,
yeah, because that's key, because you can... if you see on the news there's burned remains, and then you say to the cops, yeah, we did it, and we burned her remains, that's not proof that you have any more information than what you saw on the television. Now, the cops knew that she had been shot in the head, but that was not released publicly. So you can see in the interview, the cops are saying, what did you do to her? Where did you do it? What happened? Was it something with the face? Was it something with the head? Did you? And the whole time, Brendan's saying, we cut her hair. It's like, no, what did you do? What did you do maybe to the head? We punched her in the head. No, Brendan, what else could you do? We stabbed her. Brendan, are you lying to us? Stop lying to us. If you just tell us the truth, this will all be okay. What else might have you done to her head? Possibly did you shoot her? Yeah, we shot her in the head. Now you're wondering, why would somebody confess to something they didn't done? And there's actually a whole list of stories of people confessing to things they didn't get done. Just a regular middle class guy, I've forgotten his name, but in a different case, convinced to raping and murdering his own 3-year-old daughter when he didn't do it. Okay? This is the kind of, like, pressure that can be put on people in these kind of situations. Brendan only had an IQ of about 70. He literally had no concept of the gravity of this situation. Like, he's worried about getting back to school. He's like, oh, I've got a project due in sixth period.
He's 16 years old, isn't he?
He's 16. He's got a well below average IQ. He calls up his mum. He asks her if he's going to be able to watch WrestleMania. Like, he literally has no idea of the gravity of this situation. And he is just giving the, arguably, from the defense's side, just giving the cops what they want to hear. They suggest that they were leading him, and he was just giving them the answers they wanted.
It almost seemed like where they're trying to get him to get to the gun, like... when a girlfriend's asking you, like, they've changed something about their look. They're like, do you like how I look? And you're like, yeah, so the new, you got some new glasses? And like, no, it's something else. And they're like trying to lead you down that one. Look at my hair. Oh, do you get a haircut? No, it's not a haircut. Like, oh, do you change color? No, what's something else you do with the hair? It involves like a curling iron. No. So he's clearly has no idea what he's talking about. And then his mum comes in. The camera's still recording. I don't think he's got any awareness that the cameras are on or that anyone can hear him but his mum. And he just says to her, they made me say something I didn't do. She goes, well, why did you do that? He goes, oh, they got to my head.
Yeah, they got to my head because I'm stupid.
Yeah.
It's pretty heartbreaking listening to someone try unsuccessfully to piece together that they've basically been tricked into confessing to something pretty much the most terrible thing you can do.
Yeah. Now, even the prosecution does not put much stock in the Brendan evidence because they don't bring him... Like, he's not involved in the trial at all, from what I can tell.
No. They reference Brendan's testimony, I believe, but they don't call him to the stand during Stephen's case.
And the judge ends up even, on the defense's request, throwing out one of the claims, or what do they call them? One of the counts against Stephen that was only based on that testimony of Brendan, because it wasn't being used. It didn't come up in their case at all. So the thing about it, false imprisonment, and that whole story got thrown out and wasn't even considered by the jury.
Yeah, he was arrested on 6 charges, but 3 of them they had no evidence for without Brendan's testimony, and they ended up getting dropped. But, I mean, if you go to jail for first-degree murder, it doesn't really matter whether you get convicted of the other 2 or the other 5, whatever it would turn out to be.
One could argue there was limited value in bringing Brendan's sort of account of the events to the media at all.
Yeah, well, by far the most profitable part of that was tainting the pool to begin with. This was blared all over the news. They go, Stephen Avery did this. It's horrible. It's shocking. And, you know, in a small place like Manitowoc County, especially because Stephen Avery's a bit of a, you know, celebrity, or, you know, he's infamous already, everybody's going to be paying attention to this. And for every person to hear every single day this brutal account of what they did, how does that give you an impartial or level playing field? And one of my favorite lines in the series was, I think something was thrown out, and the DA Katz says something like, "Oh, Your Honor, by doing this, we're swimming upstream." And Stephen's lawyer says, "To be fair, every case, the prosecution should start out swimming upstream, and that is against the current of the presumption of innocence, which with your parade and your news and barrage of all these horrific details has completely wiped out for Stephen Avery," which was exactly what happened to him in the first case. There was no presumption of innocence.
How much did you love Stephen Avery's lawyers?
That's what makes it all the more unbelievable as this goes on. You see his lawyers from even the first case. They all seemed like great lawyers. You know, they were articulate. They believed in him. They argued a great case, and he went down. Through this case, I've forgotten their names, but he has 2 lawyers that are real, come across, and you know, this is, you might differ on this, but came across to me as real heroes throughout the story.
Yeah, I thought they ended up being what captivated me the most in the series to some degree. These 2 lawyers that are trying their best to help a guy, they were very likable. They spoke very, very well. And I've always thought, like, we've loved our Boston Legal shows, right? We've loved Boston Legal, Boston James Spader. Fantastic. But I always thought that's TV. Yeah. Like, it's never that exciting or well-argued or whatever in real life. And I don't think they quite hit the James Spader, Alan Shaw sort of showmanship or whatever, but it was, some of their cross-examinations were real. It's the kind of stuff you do see in Boston Legal. Like, I was really going, oh, good question, oh yeah, and just the way they stood up and delivered their arguments and stuff like that, like, was just really captivating. Something I wasn't aware that you had lawyers doing stuff like that in America.
So as I was watching the show, I was trying to figure out whether I thought Stephen Avery was guilty or not, obviously. And I'm not going to spoil that because we're going to go through some more evidence and some more defense. But something that played a role in influencing that decision, I'm like, obviously, the prosecution, it's their job to make him look as bad as possible. It's the defense's job to make him look as good as possible. But those 2 defense lawyers, the passion that they showed for it, I think just how genuine they were in their belief and fight for Stephen Avery really made me think, are these people just doing their job, or are they fighting against a true injustice?
Yeah. They, in a lot of ways, made this series for me. They were such good. Yeah, they were so good. The way they found evidence. It just was such a window I hadn't seen into something in a documentary before. Like,
so what do they bring up? We've taken a look at Brendan Dassey's confession and how that might not be that rock solid. What are some of the other things they bring up in defence?
Well, I guess there's a couple of questions they ask. And one, I guess the first to some degree is, was Stephen Avery really the last person she saw alive? And it turned out that there were quite a few people they never got alibis off. The police, they never questioned. People like, I think her roommate, there's a lot of episodes ago, so I don't try to remember exactly who and what, but it seems like they didn't explore other areas. They were very narrowed in on Stephen Avery very quickly without actually checking, you know, whether her phone was checked or messages, when her messages were last opened and things like that. Have I explained that well? That was a while ago, so I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it's completely reasonable to question Stephen Avery. Quite possibly the last person who saw her. She went missing after definitely going to his residence, or at least where the auto business was.
Yeah.
But it didn't appear as though they questioned anybody else. You know, we have an ex-boyfriend that seems to be very involved in the case with the search party. We have a roommate that, I can't remember, there seemed to be something going on with him. There was someone at her office that said she kept on getting these calls. And he's like, oh, this person again. It's like, well, who's harassing her? Could that, you know, there was an implied stalker that she had, you know. As if that isn't someone that you should look into. But it seemed like they just like the first case. And we need to separate that, okay? None of the evidence that applies there applies here. But I'm just drawing parallels that it seemed like they lasered in on Stephen Avery.
Yes. Okay. So that was the first thing. In some ways a minor thing, in the sense that if it turns out Stephen Avery's the murderer, well, probably not great police work, but you got to the right place, right? Like,
well, yeah.
Happens to be the murderer and all the evidence matches up for him, then I guess that's okay-ish.
Yeah, if you have evidence that say beyond reasonable doubt he did it, the fact that the police didn't look into anyone else, you know, might dock them a point or two on their next performance review, but it doesn't do anything to prove that that person was innocent. But what it does do is help paint this picture, evidence of a culture or likelihood within Manitowoc County that they were trying to set up Stephen Avery, the framing defense.
Yeah. Second bit of, I guess, defense for Stephen Avery is it the key? Maybe the key?
Okay.
It's pretty key, for want of a better word.
It's a key. Manitowoc County weren't supposed to have anything to do with this investigation, okay? Stephen Avery's place was turned upside down. It was searched for 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know how many days, but it was searched for a very long time. It wasn't until after several days of search where Coburn and Link, two policemen from the Manitowoc County Sheriff Department, Link, who I believe was his arresting officer in 1985, and Coburn, the guy that ignored the call to the jail that they might have the wrong person in jail, find this key supposedly in plain sight. We've just missed it for days, and now there's this key there. Okay? On the key is also DNA from Stephen Avery. But how much DNA have they collected from Stephen Avery over the years for all these tests? Well, this connects with the next piece of evidence, the blood in the RAV4, okay? Stephen Avery, supposedly, you know, that maybe throughout the event, Teresa scratched him, even though there was no DNA evidence of him on her. But he had a cut on his finger, okay? This supposedly he left in the car, didn't notice, didn't clean up, and it proves that that he was inside her car. You know, he wouldn't have been inside her car unless something shady was going on. Mm. Well, if they did want to frame him, because they have a DNA of his from all these previous whatevers. Let's go to the source. Let's go find the vial of blood they took from him years ago. It's going to be an evidence lockup. See if it's accounted for. So they go. They go and find the... it's in a like polystyrene thing where the seal has been broken. The tape has been broken. Inside, a test tube with a rubber plug on top of the test tube, which has a hole in it from a syringe.
Yeah.
Why would that be there? Why would that be there unless someone wanted to get Stephen Avery's blood for some reason?
Maybe that's how the lab does these things. They checked, they don't. So, the lab does not have a policy of inserting syringes into blood samples for any reason. There is no reason that should have been the case.
Okay, so this is looking mighty suspicious to me. Third, another major piece of evidence was the bullet. Now, this was found, I believe they originally searched in November. It's now in March. And now, the murder, according to Brendan, or at least, you know, where it started, was supposed to be in Stephen Avery's bed. She was supposedly shackled up and they slashed her neck and all this gruesome stuff. No blood. No blood in the bed. No blood in the blood on the floor. No blood anywhere. They try and suggest that she was killed somewhere else. They look in the garage. They search here for 6, 7, 8 days. They find nothing. On this day, again, when Lieutenant Link, someone who is not supposed to be involved in this investigation, on the 8th day, finds a bullet. Again, pretty much in plain sight, with Teresa's blood on it. So they say, this must be the bullet that killed Teresa. No blood anywhere else. Right, no blood in, if they shot and killed her in the garage, no blood in the garage, but they do find the bullet.
Now, I can't remember the exact details, but also, when this key and when this bullet are found, they are not under the supervision of the people from the other police department.
I can't remember if they were... I think the other people might have been there, but they were not the ones to see it.
They were not in the room.
Yeah, they were not in the room.
They were not in the rooms at the time, so they were on site... But so what we had was these guys, the Mottawa County whatevers, they go into the Steve Avery's room and they go, hey guys, we found this key here.
It's, I don't know. This all seems highly suspicious, or at least, at the very least, this was wildly against, you know, the regulations, what was supposed to happen. For example, when the car was found, there was supposed to be a log kept. And the guy that was keeping the log said, oh, no one came in from, like, 2 o'clock or whatever. But the log was only accounted for from 6:30. And he said he kept the log from 2, but he only kept it from 6:30. And at that time, I believe in the winter, in that part of the country... it would be well and truly dark before 6:30. So you would well and truly know if you started it in the daytime or the nighttime.
Yeah, that was one of the great defense attorney's lines to the jury as well, where he was going, which at that time of year is the difference between broad daylight and black.
So... we just have, it's like piece by piece they're building this theory that the Manitowoc County set Stephen Avery up. They have the motivation because they don't want to lose those millions of dollars. They need to solve this case. It's a high profile case. They need to find someone and solve it. Yeah. If you are under, investigation for falsely arresting someone 20 years ago, it's going to make you look a little bit better if that guy turns out to murder someone. They'll go, well, and even the people that were involved in the Justice Project or whatever that had helped Stephen Avery get out started to ask themselves those questions. It's like, man, we helped him get out, but if it turns out he did this, you know, maybe it was a good thing that he spent 18 years in jail, even if he didn't do that one. Who knows what he would have done?
But then you could also argue that it was that time in jail that turned him into a killer.
Yeah.
Which is actually what I thought this series was.
Yeah, me too.
When I started watching it. I thought it was a innocent guy goes to jail, and it's going to be a series on how the prison system turns someone into a murderer. Someone goes in not a murderer to jail, comes out a murderer. Is actually what I thought Make You Murderer would be about.
And that was, I think, I mean, this is perhaps getting sidetracked a little bit, but the creators of the show themselves, at least in the first few episodes, and just with the name of the show, Making a Murderer, to me, that was like, how did you make a murderer? That's calling him a murderer.
Yeah.
So there's the implication that he probably did it. You know, throughout the first episode, it kind of showed how he didn't do it. But the way it ends that first episode makes you think, oh, man, but did he do this one? And it wasn't until, you know, maybe a bit later on where you feel like the makers of the show are perhaps taking a side. And you can argue, you know, how objective they were. But I thought for at least that first portion, it gave you a pretty good chance to determine for yourself whether you thought which way to go, which way you were rooting for, I guess, or what to believe in.
I think it's done up really well. I didn't know where this series was going.
I didn't know the outcome. So if you,
I didn't know either. I sort of, and I'm not going to say what happened because we'll get to the verdict at the end, but I think, or a bit later, I think that I was thinking it was probably going to be guilty. Like, that was just my, like, thought of, like, I don't think this is a story with a happy ending. I just felt like this is going to probably be some indictment on the justice system to a degree, or something about, I think that with the title of the show, I felt like we were going to end up with him being seen as a murderer in the eyes of the state. That is sort of where I thought we'd go. Anyway, I think with this evidence against him, it was pretty, like, some of the prosecution did say, well, it's because they moved a cabinet, that's maybe why the key fell out of the cabinet at this time and things like that. But someone said, like, they couldn't have planted the evidence. Well, could they have? Oh, I guess they could have, just like an alien could have put it there. The lawyer was really good. The defense lawyer came up and said, but you don't think there was an alien in the room then, do you? And he was like, no. He goes, but they were in the room. Yes. So it's not really a fair comparison. Like, they're on the same level. And the guy was like, sorry, I don't understand the question.
One of my favorite bits was when he said, maybe the key was jammed behind it, it was moved, it fell down. But it didn't fall straight down. It kind of bounced out to the side. And so the defense lawyer says, you know, objects, that's how gravity works, things fall straight down. And I think the prosecution said something like, oh, how can you make that claim? And he's like, well, I have the keys here. Do you mind if I drop them?
Yeah.
And it's like, objection, Your Honor. He's like, okay, well, I'll save that for another time. He didn't, that's how little confidence he had in the bounce of the keys. He didn't want them dropping a pair of keys in the courtroom. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good reference. He was so good. I think also one of the guys, I can't remember if it was the guy who found the bullet or the guy who found the key, but he'd specifically volunteered to search the place. The guy who's involved in this case. The guy who has been deposed and could be standing to lose his reputation, his job, his money, if Stephen Avery wins that lawsuit, was the guy offering, without declaring his conflict of interest to the other sheriff's department, to specifically search Stephen Avery's place.
Mm.
That doesn't look good.
And I guess, so I guess this is probably the there's a lot of evidence in the show. That's why just pretty much one case goes for 10 episodes. So we're trying to condense it into the podcast. But I think one of the final pieces of evidence against Stephen Avery and against the framing defense was that they were able to test the blood for a substance. And I can't remember what it's called. It's called something like EDA or something like that.
ETA or something like that. I think there were four letters and the first one was E.
EDTA, maybe. We'll combine Matt and my guesses into EDTA. Now, what this is the substance, the blood, in order for it to stay good, whatever that is, for the blood not to go bad in storage over a long time, a substance called EDTA is put in it. So if this was fresh blood from Stephen Avery, it wouldn't have EDTA in it. But if there's no EDTA there that they test from the blood from the RAV4, so there's no EDTA, fresh blood. If there is EDTA, then it should be blood from the old sample, which means he's been framed. Now, a scientist comes on and basically says, if you find evidence of EDTA, that's a pretty good evidence that it was there. If you don't find EDTA, it's not conclusive, basically. That was her analysis. So that
it depends on, like, their levels of how many things they there was some technical science word for it, but it was sort of like you need to know the filter sort of they use to catch it to see how likely it would be that you'd see, and that information wasn't made available.
Yeah, and the lady that had tested it had contaminated it with her own DNA. She, like, was swore by it, even though based on regulation it should have been inconclusive. She got letters from the sheriff's department saying, try to connect this to that. Like, she was basically giving instructions to help them with their guilty verdict. So, but they don't necessarily have 100% proof. They say, we'll get the FBI to create a test. The FBI says, this will take months, okay? This will take months.
We haven't done this in 10 years! Like,
2 weeks later, days before the trial is supposed to come to a conclusion, they come up with a test, and it says, no EDTA. Must be fresh blood, definitely. Which is amazing to see, and one of Stephen Avery's lawyers highlighted this quite well. You know, the position that Stephen Avery is in, the machine that he is fighting, from the point at which they found other... that they got the DNA to prove that he didn't do the rape, it took him, I think it was between 1 and 2 years for them to get that evidence, test it, and then release him. They send this to the FBI. They got to create a whole new test. They say it'll take months, and yet they're able to do it in 2 weeks and get the results just before the end of Stephen Avery's trial. It's not proof that they necessarily falsified it. It just showed, look what you can get done when it's in the county's favor, in a time, as opposed to the time frame that you can get something done when it's in Stephen Avery's favor.
Yeah, and I would say since it was probably a bit of a rush job, and I don't mean the results are wrong, probably when she was talking about the level of filters they used to find it, I imagine wouldn't have been the most advanced. Like, it would just be my guess. That's just speculative, as I guess they would say. But I think that was interesting. And they got this done by the FBI, and what I thought was an incredible contrast was the county's skepticism earlier to the DNA evidence for Stephen Avery. Well, my drawing's still pretty good. Well, I did have a drawing of him that someone said looked sort of like the rapist. To, like, you can't really trust, to, yeah, nah, the DNA evidence is in. Sorry, Stephen Avery, no EDTA. This is 100% conclusive. You could never, like, just can't argue that. Like, yeah.
So this case, when I was watching this, I haven't really binge-watched anything in a while. It wasn't a matter of, ooh, should I watch the next episode? It was like, what happens next? What happens next? What happens next? And in evidence of just the endless drama surrounding this story, this show, this case, it comes to the verdict.
Yeah.
They go in. One of the, what are they called? The jurors has to recuse themselves. Well, they asked to leave for emergency family, something or other related reasons. So this whole thing could end up being a mistrial. They could do it with 11 jurors, do the whole case again. They end up getting in someone.
I was like, mistrial, is that season 2?
Yeah.
They're going to end on a cliffhanger. Okay, we're going back again, guys. Oh,
this is great for ratings. Stretch this out. But they end up getting in another juror. And we end up finding out later on that, you know, a lot of juries do this. Well, they say, let's just gauge the room, say, guilty, not guilty, or undecided. To start off with, there was 7 not guilty, 3 guilty, 2 undecided. But I don't know how long it was, maybe a day or two later, they end up coming back and they give the verdict of guilty. And not what was bizarre was they gave guilty, I believe, on 2 of the counts, but not 1 of the counts. It seemed literally impossible to separate the 3. It wasn't as though, you know, one of them was completely separate. Like, if you...
Well, possession of an illegal firearm was the 3rd one, and I feel like who cares about that one?
But if you... I can't remember. But the lawyers were baffled by it, and they said it didn't make any sense, because if you don't think that
he had a... mutilation of the body.
Which one did they give not guilty on?
Mutilation of the body. So I say the 3rd one, which was guilty as well, was for some firearm possession thing. It was really very uninteresting. The one with, first one, guilty homicide, not guilty, mutilating the body.
Oh, for mutilating remains? So that's bizarre. You think he killed him, but you don't think he, like, cut up and hid the body? Then who cut up and hid the body? It really made no sense.
It does make no sense, and that's why they thought it was probably a compromise verdict.
Yeah. The guy goes to jail forever, but hey, at least you didn't go for lifetime plus 20 years.
Yeah.
Insane.
No, it's bizarre.
So, basically, that... He gets convicted, appeal. Nothing! That's how it is. Stephen Avery's... He's still in jail today. That's the ending of the story.
He falls in love.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're looking for a slight uptick here, someone that follows this story, believes in Stephen Avery, writes him letters, they end up falling in love, and I guess he has a girlfriend of sorts.
Yeah.
Which is kind of
cute. I didn't like that direction. I didn't think that's what Making a Murderer was about. I didn't know we'd end with him finding love.
I guess we can quickly touch on Brendan, because he is a separate case. And man, do you feel for this kid. His own lawyer does nothing to help him, in the media, finds a guy whose sole intent is to get him to confess, okay? They end up using all of that confession against him. They're able to throw out that lawyer and get a new lawyer. But at that point, the media's against him, the public's against him, and they have the confession against him. And through, they show all this tape. And it was bizarre, though. They show 3.5 hours or whatever, but they don't show the final hour of the tape where you see him call his mum, and he's clearly confused and has no idea what he's just confessed to.
Well, that's why they didn't show that tape. They're part of the tape.
Well, the defense could have asked for that.
Mm,
I don't know. Maybe. That was very confusing. With no evidence, not a single shred of physical evidence, the only thing they have against Brendan is the confession, which was deemed to be allowable by the court. But from a lot of people's perspective in the show, was highly leading. He's convicted. I mean, he gets sentenced, I don't know, he's 35 or something. He's eligible for parole after like 25 years. But basically, his life is going to be spent in jail as well. That's how Brendan's story ends.
Yeah. Very sad. I was a bit less interested in that case, to be honest.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. That's the verdict given by Manitowoc County and various other courts up the chain.
Just on the Stephen Avery case, we love the lawyers, right? We love Stephen Avery's lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. And I'm not saying I'd do a better job than them by any means. I think they're better lawyers than I would be. But I feel like they made 2 mistakes.
All right. Let's hear it.
I think Stephen Avery should have taken the stand. And I don't think, and I think Netflix, or the directors of this series, never told us why he didn't. I feel like that was something that I wanted to know why, and there was no explanation as to the behind the scenes of why that decision was made.
I think that's a good question. I'm sure they had their reasons, though it is interesting that they didn't raise that, with that wasn't addressed on the show. It's interesting because he too was supposed to have far below average intelligence. But throughout the series, when you hear him interviewed, it's not that he seems that eloquent or articulate, but he seems to have a good grasp of... Yeah, he's able to explain things well. He establishes a point and then he explains it with reason. So where this is going is, you know, maybe they thought that he would get tricked on the stand. And I actually ended up thinking he wasn't that foolish. And it made it even harder to believe that he would be so silly as to burn the remains in his own backyard and not use a car crusher to dispose of evidence. But maybe because he isn't that sharp, they thought, you know, he might get tricked into saying the wrong thing on the stand. I think you bring up a good question, though, because it seemed like the jury pool was so tainted because of all the media coverage that people were so against him to begin with, that maybe him going up there would give them a chance to see Stephen Avery as opposed to the Stephen Avery you've heard about on TV.
Now, there's often reasons to not put someone on the stand. Like, I'm not saying that every person accused of murder should always take the stand. But if I'm a juror, I'm wanting to... ideally, I want the person to take the stand and say they didn't do it under oath. And I'm not saying that doing that, I just go, oh, yeah, they mustn't have done it, I'm going to believe them. But I'm saying, you know, there might be part of you in your mind going, why didn't they want to do that? Like, I just feel like, as a juror, I would have been a little bit disappointed that he wasn't prepared to take the stand. And it may have influenced me a little bit negatively about, like, the case. Even if he'd just taken the stand and said, I'm innocent, and then just answered all the questions people asked him with, I'm innocent, I didn't do that, I'm innocent, I didn't do that. I go, well, at least he's prepared to say that under, I don't know. Like, I just feel like that's a good part of your case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go. I think the other thing is, I think there was a lot of, especially with the prosecutor, yeah, maybe they did this, I guess it's edited down, with the prosecution there was a lot of sort of skepticism that the police would do something like this. Like, sort of like, how could you say this about our department? Look at these. I love how in the closing they have the photos of these sinister characters that have clearly done the wrong thing in every step of the way, of them sort of smiling and saying, do you want to destroy their families? Like, when their families are going to think of them or whatever. And part of me thought, I'm not sure in front of the jury enough was made of the motive that the police department would have to, like, you know what I mean? Because this guy was already threatening their reputation. Like, you know, it's almost like when the prosecution raised what the police stood to lose if there was a guilty verdict here, it was highlighting what they were on the precipice of losing from Stephen Avery already.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they talked about that more. I mean, obviously, they have to edit it down for the show. And to us, the audience, they'd already established what was at stake, so maybe not as much of that got in to the show. But yeah, I think that's important in establishing that if you are going to suggest that the cops framed Stephen Avery, that they had a motive to do so.
Yes. I think maybe there's a chance, and I don't know the law, that maybe they weren't allowed to refer to the civil case to the jury. Like, maybe that's something that you're not allowed to mention. But I don't know. I feel like in Boston Legal, when Alan Shaw was told stuff like that, he just threw it in there anyway. Like, he found a way of getting to it.
it's hard to take that back. It's the kind of thing you say, and then the, you know, prosecution objects, and then the judge says sustained. The jury's supposed to disregard that. Well, they can't disregard it because they just heard it. Like,
yeah. That happened with this show about the prosecution said something like that, and they got that struck as well. I can't remember what that was now, but.
So I guess probably not as important to Stephen Avery, but perhaps just as important to the rest of you, as well as the court's verdict. You guys want to hear Scream Verdict's verdict. Did Stephen Avery commit this crime? Matt, did he do it?
Not sure.
Elaborate?
I don't know who killed Teresa, whatever her name is. Like, I wasn't there. Like, I'm not. But I think the way the police conducted the investigation, there is no way you could conclude with any degree of certainty that Stephen Avery killed her. He may have, but I think the process was so bad that it's impossible to know. That the police created complete, like, they didn't do anything, they didn't do anywhere near enough right in order to have any confidence in anyone doing it or not doing it.
So if you were on the jury, what would your verdict be?
Not guilty.
Not guilty.
Of any of the three counts. Except that firearm one, they didn't really present much of the evidence one way or the other on that.
Okay. I am 99% sure that the Manitowoc County sheriffs, or at least some of them, did things to actively frame Stephen Avery. This doesn't mean he didn't do it, because even the defense, this kind of went both ways, and I'm not sure if he established the point of this to the jury. It's like, well, why would they do it? Okay. Cops, when framing innocent people, don't always believe them to be innocent and want to frame them anyway. They think that they're guilty. They're just trying to ensure the conviction. Okay?
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily prove that Stephen Avery was innocent. I just think it's evidence of not due process.
Yes.
In terms of whether Brendan Dassey is guilty, I think there is a 95% chance he's innocent. There isn't a single shred of physical evidence. The only thing they have against him is the confession. And even his story, the things that he said, do not line up in terms of the physical evidence, such as they slashed her throat on the bed, and yet there's no blood in the bed or the bedroom. The only thing they have in the confession, and I think that was bullied out of him by a poor, defenseless, emotionally and mentally challenged young boy. I do not... almost sure he didn't do it. Stephen Avery, I am about 80% sure Stephen Avery did not do it. There are some things, and as well as there's evidence that has been brought up that wasn't shown in the Netflix series, and you can look that up. I think it's pretty much all circumstantial, but it does paint him in a little bit of a different light. I think there's, you know, he had more of an opportunity, but I still think there is far from enough evidence to say beyond a reasonable doubt Stephen Avery murdered Teresa Hellbach, and I would have voted not guilty.
Yeah, and you've read that extra evidence or what they're saying and things, because I read that last night too, at least a little bit of it, and some of it is quite alarming to read. Whether, you know, something that a prisoner said. Like, I'm not sure if I'm really trusting a guy who's in prison with.
Yeah, needs, because they can just find someone that was in prison with Stephen Avery and say, look, this will help you with your parole. You know, if you've got anything to say about him. Yeah.
We know this department is not beyond that. Like,
very circumstantial.
I'd say even if you told me that all that circumstantial evidence was sort of all that was true, that wasn't forced out of the guy, all those sorts of things, I just still think that just on what I know, like, it doesn't matter, obviously, if there's a smoking gun or something, there just isn't enough, the way the department and the way they manage that conflict of interest, you could not with any certainty say that Stephen Avery killed his, killed the photographer.
Yeah.
Like, they mismanage, if he's guilty, they mismanage the case to the point where you could not reach a guilty verdict.
I felt so bad, obviously, for Stephen Avery, but also the lawyers whose whole life has been in this system. And they were so mind-blown to the point where one of them even said, part of me hopes he is guilty because it is just so scary to believe the amount of opportunities this legal system has given to free him and he's been shut down at every turn.
Yeah, it was alarming. It was heartbreaking to hear that the jury had started with seven, like, thinking he was innocent, that actually they'd done a good job. Like, the lawyers, had, like, even with all the things going against him, even with the completely tainted jury pool, he was, most of them actually was thinking that he could be innocent.
There truly is not, you cannot express how many twists and turns and mind-blowing and upsetting moments there are in this show. And it's alarming to, not just clearly to us, because over 300,000 people have signed petitions to get him released. Unfortunately, they're appealing to Obama, and this isn't a federal case, so he can't pardon them. I don't know why someone didn't research that before they had over 300,000 signatures. But clearly this has affected people, and I bet this is not the last we hear of this story.
No, it's riveting. It's so, it was incredible. How did you enjoy, in the final episode, that cat's guy turned out he'd been, like, abusing women or something? What was the thing? Like, he'd been sending abusive text messages to women?
Yeah, he was trying to seduce clients of his, and the clients were victims of domestic abuse. It was just gross and horrible and terrible to hear. But on the other hand, very satisfying to hear that this guy that you completely hate by the end of the show, there's at least some sort of comeuppance for him in terms of his reputation being ruined.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't I saying that? Oh, thank goodness he was, like, exposed as the creepy slaver.
I know it doesn't shed light on it, evidence in the Stephen Avery case, but it just fits so perfectly the kind of person you think he is and the kind of people that you believe would do this to an innocent man.
Don't you think that it's that the documentary makers loved when that came out? Oh, good. We're going to focus on this as much as possible in the final episode.
I loved his response to it. He's like, really, guys? Like, I am receiving terrible Yelp reviews. Like,
yeah. He was so annoyed.
Like, I don't think Stephen Avery's too worried about the Avery Auto Business Yelp reviews, seeing as he's now in jail forever.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, anyway. Oh, boy. What
are we going to give a rating for the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, a little bit hard to compare, seeing as we don't really do a lot of documentaries, but just for anything on screen, can't remember the last time I was this addicted to a show, I was this emotionally involved, engaged, interested, excited, intrigued. It truly is. In itself, the story itself is remarkable, and I think the way it was portrayed was really well done, you know, right down to, you know, just the editing, the opening credits, I think awesome, just paints a great picture. I'm going to go nuts. I'm going to give it a 10. I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10.
A 10? A 10? Shocked. This was such a riveting show. Like, it was really... I watched 8 episodes in 2 days. Like, I just, like, binged it, like, incredibly. I didn't think we'd be able to podcast about this today, Jonathan, but I just couldn't stop watching. Yeah, it was just so good. It's like so compelling drama. It's heartbreaking. There's times when you get excited when the lawyers say something good on the stand. Like, it's really good. And, like, I think just as captivating as most dramas I'm watching today. And we're in the golden age of television. Like, it's not even like dramas are that bad at the moment. So I'm loving it. I think it's, I thought it was really good. I think a few episodes were slower than others. Like, I think the last couple of episodes didn't have the intensity of, like, when the case was, like, evidence was coming out and things. So, and I think there was one or two bits which I would have liked just a bit more perspective on, like, why didn't Stephen Avery testify? Like, I still had a few things, like, that I feel like they could have got into. That all being said, loved it. Such a good show. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
9. It's a good... It's late contender for the ESPYs. Netflix drops a series December 18.
Whoa.
We'll see. Now, this has been a pretty long podcast. Do we have anything that needs to be done in housekeeping, or should we save it for next podcast housekeeping?
I don't think I've got any text in, but anyway.
Okay.
Oh, it says message send failure. Maybe try sending it to too many people.
We're gonna save housekeeping for next podcast. The mystery continues. A reason to listen to the next episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. Got a couple of good ones coming up. We could be doing The Good Dinosaur, maybe The Walking Dead, Star Wars. It's awards season. Lots of stuff to look forward to. So stick around, and we'll catch you next week.